And now, the hosts of Surge Baseball and Beyond, Cookie Rojas and Tim Grubbs.
Fans, welcome back to another episode of Surge Baseball and Beyond. I'm sitting here in the shade with the voice of the Wichita Wind Surge, Mr. Tim Grubbs. How's it going, Tim?
Oh, it's going okay. It's warm.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't seen rain now. I don't know. I shouldn't say that because I know next year I'm going to regret, later this summer if baseball comes back, actually regret making comments about no rain.
You got to bank the sunny days, though.
Yes.
You know? So,
but we haven't seen rain now in a couple of weeks.
It's been really warm, like really, really warm. Let me give you a little side note here. So finally got a chance to do some exploring the other day. We're recording this on Monday. We're on the Emprise Bank Pavilion. It's gorgeous out. Another hot day. And I was told that there's a really cool waterfall at Cowley Fishing Lake, about an hour and 20 minutes southeast of here. And so I get in the car with the missus, and we head on down there. We got our dog Miles, and we're heading down there. We think, it'd be pretty cool. We'll check out this nice waterfall. I've seen some pictures of it. Let me tell you, I saw more water coming out of a garden hose than I did off this waterfall.
Oh, wow.
I guess it's because it's been kind of dry.
Right.
And there was literally just a trickle of water. And it's very, very steep. So you go and you drive. You're in the middle of nowhere. You go down this gravel road. There's no room for two cars. You go there. You park. You're going to walk down. And we looked and we're like, do you even hear the waterfall? And then finally we looked through like the woods and you could see it was just a trickle of water. So It's been relatively dry here. And my wife had a chat with her family. She does it every Sunday, like a Zoom kind of thing. And it was only like in the 60s back home. So, I mean, it's 90 something degrees here. Definite heat wave. I don't know. So
what we definitely went from, 60s, 70s. It's like we jumped over the 80s. Like
you're right.
We didn't preheat the oven. Jumped straight from like 75 to 95.
It is really, really warm.
And for me, you know, after living in New Orleans for so many years, I got used to the heat and
humidity.
I've
been wanting to ask you that. What do you think about like the heat here compared to New Orleans?
I prefer it here because not the humidity.
Yeah.
But the one thing I do miss is just the occasional rain and, you know, and different things like that. And as a person who's trying to, you know, take care of his lawn, and you don't get much rain. It's things starting to get brown. It's starting to die off. You know, a lot of people in our development, because there's lakes everywhere, you can drill a pump.
Oh, really?
And you get basically free water to mow your lawn. So, and then they get the irrigational system. Our house, when we bought it, unfortunately did not have that. So I'm now learning that why everybody's yard is so green and mine is not.
Oh, wow. So they can really basically go down subterranean, pull up some water, groundwater, and feed it that way.
So I haven't gotten any quotes or anything on what that cost. I've got a ballpark figure from my neighbor from a few years ago who said, you know, what it cost him. So I assume it would be.
Is it pretty easy to do?
Well, I mean, you hire a company to do it, but yes, it sounds like it's.
Gotcha.
It's not that hard to do, and then they put the sprinkler system in your yard and different things like that. Tear up your yard and all that sort of stuff. But it sounds like it's something that can be done. And obviously we look at this green, beautiful green yard.
I know, we look at our field, and it's really, really nice, and I wish we were playing some baseball, you know?
But I really wish, and, you know, we don't have any update on there, and I'm sure.
No news. I mean, everyone, I just got off the phone with someone they wanted to, and I'm like, you know as much as I do.
Right.
You know, and folks, what happens is once Major League Baseball decides, it trickles down to the minor league systems, and then hopefully we'll have some idea. I know you and I have been going back since, like, May, saying we think, you know, personally, off the record, we've been like, hopefully this week we'll know.
This is the week.
Yeah.
I thought for sure last week was the week.
Yeah.
Like, one way or another, we're going
to
know.
I was listening to Buster Olney on a podcast, and he was saying he's got players and front office people calling him, hey, have you heard anything?
Right.
You know, it's just – it's one of those situations, and – you know, there's so many things that are happening right now in our society. I mean, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, the incident in Minneapolis with George Floyd. And, you know, our condolences go out to him and all the folks who've been victims of, you know, what's been happening in our country over several, you know, 100 years, really. We've been blessed. We had protests here that have been relatively calm. I think our police chief's done a heck of a job of communicating, our mayor and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I think with all the things that are happening, in my opinion, if we had some baseball, I mean, it'd be just a great unifier, bringing everyone just back together to enjoy the pastime.
Yeah, no, and that's ultimately what we hope. You know, we were hoping for baseball on 4th of July. Like, we just had a Memorial Day with no baseball for the first time in, what, 100 years.
I know. And desperate times, I will admit, on this podcast, I have been watching European soccer.
You have?
I have, yes. And my wife looked at me, and she did a double take, and I was like, yep, desperate times. I was watching some – I think our COO, Matt White, would be proud of me. I was actually watching some – European soccer.
I have not dove into any of that yet. I did enjoy the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa documentary.
I watched some of it. I'm going to finish it tonight.
It, you know, not that I'm a spoiler. It just is a revision. I wouldn't want to use the term documentary because you don't. There's nothing in there you probably don't know.
Right. Right,
it's not
right.
like the Jordan one where we learn stuff.
All the things behind the scenes that we didn't know.
They really don't touch on the steroid thing too much.
Right.
They really kind of, they touch on it, but they dance around it.
I'm at that point right now where they mentioned it and that was it. They
that's
just
it.
Moved on. Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
The part that you saw, they don't really go into it any further than that.
No.
And I thought they would dive into it a little bit more. Yeah. I mean, I'm one of those people, that was a great summer.
That summer I was studying for the bar exam.
Okay.
So I didn't see anything. I mean, literally until the bar exam, until I took it at the end of July. Then my daughter was born, and then I caught it at the tail end.
Right.
That was it. I didn't see any of the build-up.
Yeah,
or
the build-up
game
was great. You know,
like
I was broadcasting. I was in single A, and our team was really good that year because we went wire-to-wire first place.
Wow.
And I remember bringing it up, talking about the race. I remember we wrapped up game one of the playoffs, and I got off the air, and then I went to a bar that was right next to the stadium and got to see
Mark McGwire.
Yeah, wow. See him break the
no
record.
No spoilers.
Yeah, no spoilers. I mean, this is 23 years ago. So.
Exactly, no spoilers.
I got to see it, and I thought it was really cool. And I remember it was, you know, it's crazy how long ago. And I thought it was awesome. It was great for the sport.
I think it was, too. After the strike and having no baseball, no playoffs and all that, definitely needed
it. And now what we're going through, it's funny watching it now because you have no baseball and you're like, all right, what will have to happen to bring fans back? You know, because you're going to lose fans overall happens here, no matter what. At least they say they're going to.
Some people will be nervous to go back. Some people won't want to go back. So it's just – you know, we're in this kind of limbo right now.
Yeah.
So, but one good thing, I mean, we are leading up to a holiday that you and I will be able to enjoy. It's Father's Day coming up. We're recording this on Monday, so hopefully you listen to it. And you got any good Father's Day memories of the ballpark with your dad?
You know what? I mean, obviously, I had a great Mother's Day story because I was with my mom on Mother's Day, like my very first year in baseball. I don't think I've ever been around my dad.
Really?
In the years, you know, they always –
yeah.
He makes the trip every year, but I don't remember him ever coming. I don't think it ever worked out over Father's Day. Now, I know, obviously, growing up, I remember doing things with him, going fishing and going to games and different things. He was always there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think we're planning on doing a little Zoom call with my brother and sister. You know, I'm trying to get everybody together since we can't get together.
I know.
It's have crazy. A little bit of fun this Sunday.
Now, I lost my dad 5 years ago, so memories are, you know, aplenty. My first game was in 1973 at McCoy Stadium. Got a chance to see my hometown team, and it was an April day game. Rainy, miserable. I had an Elmer Fudd hat. I remember it to this day, one of those flaps ears. And I think I had a hot dog and a hot chocolate sitting with my dad up in the upper row. And then you fast forward, you know, so many years later when I was working for the team, my hometown team, my father came to a Father's Day game, and I had him and I put him in a suite. And it was like we really went a long way, you know. So,
yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah. I was actually thinking of Father's Day memories, not actual father. Like, you brought up April, I'm like,
wait a second,
Father's Day is in June.
Yeah,
but now I get where you meant.
Yeah, my dad. I mean, he introduced me to the game. He was a big fan of the game, so it was nice. And the thing that I'm gonna miss is I'm gonna have my daughter. She's here with us in Kansas, but I'm just gonna miss my boys. You know, and I had the pleasure, which I don't know if many people get a chance to do that, but I had a chance to work with all three of my sons when I was in Pawtucket. They were mascots, or they were in the clubhouse, or they were working cameras for games.
Oh, wow.
So I have a picture of me and my boys all in our Paw Sox shirts, all on the field, and just having an opportunity to
that's
do
really
that.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So
now if you ask my three-year-old daughter where she works, she will tell you the ballpark.
Right.
So, and she tells her daycare people and all that stuff.
Really?
And Maggie is her boss.
Oh, wow. Cool.
And she packs hats. And that's stuff that from that she did in New Orleans. That's that cool. She would put hats in boxes.
That's awesome.
And get ready, you know, because of her time at the stadium. And
that's awesome.
So eventually, maybe she'll be able to work with me. I never worked with my dad, but you know, I had gone to work with him.
Yeah.
Plenty of times.
Yeah. My dad made me work with him. Yeah. My dad, he was a factory worker, textile mill worker, and he got me to work there at 13 to pick up garbage.
Oh wow.
After school, because for some reason I didn't have a sport or something. I didn't make a team or something. It was the baseball team. My freshman year,
yep.
I got cut. And he said, well, you come to work with me. And I was just like, I'm not going to go work in the factory. He made me pick up garbage.
Wow. Yeah,
that was his thing. And basically his message was, stay in school or you're going to end up working here. Yeah. Not that
that is probably a pretty good life lesson.
But it was a good life lesson because I did not enjoy picking up garbage or cleaning bathrooms. It was not a lot of fun. But in this podcast, the transition for Father's Day, hopefully you listen to it. Our guest is going to be giving away a choice of free books.
Yes.
So it'll be you're going to have to continue to listen to the podcast to get your opportunity to get some free books.
All you have to do is pay the shipping.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
And you get the free book.
Yeah. So hopefully my kids will get this before then, and I'll get one of these free books.
Yeah.
Well, sit back. Yeah. Relax and enjoy the rest of the podcast, folks. And we're back. I'm joined here now in the offices at Riverfront Stadium with my colleague Tim Grubbs. But we're joined by someone that we've had an opportunity to talk to and exchange some emails with recently, and some of you might know him. He's a Brooklyn kid who grew up to build some successful companies, including his current company, Collectible Exchange. He's a Syracuse grad, an exceptional salesman. Great speaker. He's given talks at TEDx, Nike, Cornell University, BMW, Live Nation. He's the author of several books, The Business Playbook, You Gotta Have Balls. I love the title.
I love the title.
And Living on Purpose. He's been on various podcasts, such as Jeffrey Gittimer's Sell or Die podcast and John Gordon's Positive University. And he's just someone that we're delighted to have. Ladies and gentlemen, I have Mr. Brandon Steiner on the phone with us from New York. How you doing, Brandon?
I'm doing great. Well, thanks for having me. You know, I'm a big baseball fan. Obviously, I've done a lot of work with a lot of baseball players, but I can never talk about baseball enough.
Well, we hope we can have baseball soon. I guess before we get into anything, is this summer without baseball, without sports, has business gone up at all?
Well, the crazy thing is, you know, my new company, Collectible Exchange, is really like a better version of eBay. So people can go onto the site and sell and buy their own stuff, which is my goal. Mm. To have people be able to really trade anything they want at any time. And then it's also an outlet for the players to sell stuff direct. So if you haven't been home in the last 3 months, your wife's not on you to get closets cleaned, basements cleaned. So we've had an outpouring of stuff. I've been crazy.
That makes sense.
We have over 50,000 items up on the site, and we just launched in December.
Wow.
So it's been tough keeping up with it just because we didn't see this coming. I mean, people are putting stuff up, but listen, after so much time and there's no sports on, you start going through your collectibles. And so it's been really good, actually.
Yeah.
From fortunate the circumstances, but from my website standpoint, it's amazing how many people have incredible amounts of stuff that they decided they wanted to maybe trade or buy some other stuff.
No, that's great. So, I guess let's get started. How did you get started? You know, I know you got started in the sports marketing world and in the hotel business. You know, how did you get started into the collectible world?
Oh, boy. I mean, I was always a saver. You know, and that's, I always ask people, are you a collector, a saver? Kind of almost the same thing. And I think for me, well, it's really two stories. My first autograph was Thurman Munson.
Oh.
And I was at Fenway Park, and I begged my mom. We had tickets for the next night, and we're staying at the hotel that the Yankees were staying in. I was driving her crazy, so I was like 14. I mean, she's like, all right, go to the game. It was, you know, the Sheridan was like 10 blocks away from Fenway. So, you know, in those days, you let a 14-year-old go to a baseball game on his own. I was going to games when I was 10 on our own with my friends.
Wow.
10, which is insane when I think back. And I had the lineup cards, you know, kept scoring everything. So anyway, I'm at the game. I'm yelling at Thurman Munson like a lunatic because I got this one seat that somebody gave me. It was like 10 rows behind the Yankee on deck circle. So I'm yelling, Thurman, Thurman, Thurman. The guy doesn't blink, doesn't even twitch his head over to look at me. Nothing. Anyway, we go on, we win the game, and go back to the hotel, I get in the elevator, this big arm holds the door open and walks in, gets in my face. What do you want? Irvin Munson. He's looking down at me. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, what do you say? And I said, well, you saw my program. And he said, I got a beautiful Thurman Munson autograph. I never forget that feeling. Wow. And but the real answer to that was, like, that was, I always remember that feeling as a young kid getting that incredible autograph from one of your, you know, your idols. But I think the answer really is, when I started Steiner, I was just doing marketing, which I'm still doing to this day. The Steiner Agency, you know, markets players, and that's all I was doing, is helping companies find athletes. And back in the late 80s, early 90s, it wasn't that sexy. It wasn't like it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a bump and grind, and that wasn't that popular thing. So I was very much on the outset. So I was thinking, how can I make more money? So I was doing this appearance at Roger Staubach back in Dallas, and with American Express, and I was like, listen, he's speaking, but if he signs 10 things, you can give that out to some clients. You can give that out to some people that couldn't make the event. He's like, I love that. Mm. Matter of fact, go pick me up like 25 things. Charge me as much as you want. So at the time, I think Roger was like 10 grand. I made $1,000. Then I picked him up like $5,000 worth of stuff for Roger to sign, and I made like $2,000. So I was like, this is great. So when I started the collectible thing, it was just really an extension to the B2B. You know, I was booking a lot of players and appearances for trade shows, for appearances, and we do raffles and sweepstakes as part of it. I never thought that I was going to create a brand and take this hobby and make it into a business. Now, when I open up my new company, the Collectible Exchange, I'm thinking people have so much stuff. I probably put like 30 million collectibles into the marketplace, wow, and I'm not the only one. And they need a really clean, safe place to be able to buy and sell their stuff. So I offer additional authentication, valuation, right, on the site to make it a lot easier for baseball fans particularly, but all kinds of sports fans to trade and sell their stuff. So far, so good.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Now, the site's been up since 2019, December, you said, of this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's you mentioned it's pretty simple. The website, I'm assuming, is it's the Collectible Exchange?
Yeah, or you go to cxstuff.com.
Okay.
To make it worthwhile for your listeners, because I know they can't do too many things at one time, I don't want to overburden them, you can get a free book on my website through the end of June. Mm-hmm. Just pay for the shipping. You pick any one of my three books. And I highly recommend, if you're a baseball sports fan, take the You Gotta Have Balls. It's a really good book. Or a Father's Day gift is the Living on Purpose book, which has some really good A-Rod and Mariano stories in there.
Yeah.
So help yourself, get a free book, and then you can check out the site, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, cool. And when you've, I mean, you've done this now for a long time. You've got, you know, tremendous background. You've done some great speaking engagements that, you know, folks can find online. What are some of the things you would tell a young entrepreneur today? Because you were really, really hustling early on in this business. What are some of the tips that you would give? Just maybe one or two pieces of advice that you would tell a young entrepreneur right now looking to do something, anything, either in this business, sports, or in any other business.
Well, just two things. I mean, first of all, the highest level of entrepreneurism in this country is 55 to 65. Just, I know everybody thinks it's young. I tell a young entrepreneur is that experience and strategy is critical. Mm. And that execution beats strategy for breakfast. You got to be able to execute. And when you're young, in order to execute, you need experience. You need people around you that you know for a period of time that you can count on. And sometimes that comes with experience. So go learn the trades and become really good at something on someone else's dime. You know, it's okay to work for somebody, even if you're an entrepreneur. You could be always be entrepreneurial in a company. I think, you know, I'm going through it now. I mean, I've started two companies all in the last year. I'm a young entrepreneur. Mm. And I'm giving myself the advice that I used to give at lectures and talks. But I think one of the most important things, if you're starting something, is positive cash flow and understand the financing that you're going to need. Take in a little bit more money than you're spending, because even though you may think you're making profit, I've seen a lot of companies go out of business because they need capital, accounts receivable, and I think they underestimate cash flow and get confused with profit and you know, your overhead and stuff like that. And that's typically you know, the back end of things is always hard for an entrepreneur, because the entrepreneur is the idea person, and they're scheming and they're dreaming and they're selling, but the back end is really, really, really important. Mm. And then the second thing I would say is relationships. That, you know, it's really important to value relationships, to build on that. It's not always what you can make on a relationship, but what you can build with a relationship. And don't be afraid to fire some relationships that are draining you, that people aren't appreciating, because that can really wipe you out. around you that don't appreciate the work you're doing, just to take an advantage because you're young, getting started. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it pays to fire some customers, and sometimes you have to fire some friends and relatives too that are draining you, because it's really important you keep a positive direction. And just doing a quick money grab, and that's your excuse for keeping a certain client, could be detrimental in the long haul.
You mentioned relationships. Have you ever been starstruck? You know, you work with a lot of athletes, celebrities. I'm sure you've had some pretty big names that are in that cell phone of yours and you've met in person. Has anybody ever been like where you had to take a step back and be like, hey, I'm working with, you know, Roger Staubach or whoever?
Well, there's no question. I mean, I try to maintain the starstruck even after doing this 32 years. I mean, I don't think that any of these celebrities that I'm starstruck with are any different or better than anyone else, but they are great at something. And I try to keep the starstruck mindset because I think it's important creating the products that I create. You need to have a little of that, wow, I can't believe I'm with this person. I mean, I'm still, wow, I've been with Mariano Rivera for 25 years and with him multiple times, many times a month, and I'm still like, wow, I can't believe this guy.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest wow for me probably is Muhammad Ali. You know, I had him under contract for several years.
Wow.
And obviously was with him many, many times. And it got to be, spend some time with him in the 90s when he was still easier to talk and communicate with. And I learned a lot from him, though. He was an extremely generous person. And him and Walter Payton were the two athletes that really had a profound effect, that their whole underlying theory was that when they're out in public, since they are a public figure, that they belong to the public. And that, you know, that they feel like they can't do enough and give enough to people for positive motivation or anything they could do. They were completely selfless. Like, Walter Payton blew my mind. You know, some of the things that we did on a few weekends we spent together on some marketing stuff. And the amount of, like, the running around and how far he went out of his way to make people happy, which is, I think, tremendous leadership. When you can go out of your way to make somebody happy, that's leadership. And you can help someone, that's leadership. And I thought both of those talents were really incredible, obviously, athletes. But they were incredible what they understood their responsibility was off the field, and understood that how people looked up to them, and they didn't want to disappoint.
Well, both of those names are big time names.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I make it a point. Like, if I had an idol, or I had a player that I really wanted to meet, I would scheme, dream, and just do anything to figure out how to work with them. So, you know, I checked off a lot of those boxes. I mean, if I wanted to work with someone, it's funny. Like, there's a couple women athletes that I love that I really think women athletes are underutilized, and that's like my next phase of stardom. I want to go and create a lot of marketing opportunities for women athletes. I think there's some great women athletes out there, and I'm a big WNBA guy, so I'm going to zero in on that a little bit.
Is it harder now to, you know, work with relationships to grab these things since everybody has agents?
No, not really. I mean, relationships are important, and develop relationships with agents is just as important as sometimes it's a talent. But it's definitely more buckled up. I mean, back when I got started, agents would call me up and say, here's my player's number. Please call him. Anything you could do, I appreciate. Anything.
Wow.
I mean, big names, too. Now, everybody's got everything buttoned up. You know, they got the finance department. They got the investment department, the marketing. But a lot of the retired players I still have longstanding relationships with. And players that just recently retired that I've worked with as a current player, a lot of times the agents drop off. But some of the agents are really good. They're helpful in their relationship. And then, you know, some of the agents don't do marketing, and then some of them do. So it's a little tricky. But in this kind of environment now, you know, everybody's looking for work. The player's a little bored. There's some good opportunities out there for companies, especially ones that are doing a lot of digital marketing stuff, to slip players in. So I've been constantly looking for companies that are doing more of their marketing and business digitally, because a lot of those companies, their business is up. And I'm trying to say, what do you think about using an athlete that way? You know, obviously they're not hiring a player to do a speech in front of their 500 people for their company outing, or they're not doing a appearance in their store. But there's a lot of stuff you can do online, and now I'm finding that the players are a lot more available. So that's been pretty cool the last few months. I'm seeing an uptick in at least availability, and you know, players are a little more reasonable because they're less busy.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, if I walked into your office, I'm sure you've got collectibles all over the wall. What's the one thing or two things that jump out of
maybe they're odd, maybe they're bizarre, or you know, most prized for you?
Well, this is what I love about the exchange is that I always thought I had the coolest stuff, but now I look in the exchange, there's so many great collectors out there that have so many insane things. It blows my mind that some of the stuff that's coming in lately. I've got two things that come to mind. One is, I went to go see President Clinton right after he got out of office to go see if I could sign him on a collectible deal. And believe me, when I tell you, you know, I have a book, you gotta have balls. It's an understatement, but it was my mother's favorite line. I fear no one. There's no one that I wouldn't track down and call and say, let's do some kind of licensing, autograph, whatever it is. So I go to see President Clinton. I knew he was a big Muhammad Ali fan, so I had Muhammad Ali sign, you know, to Bill, best wishes, but I give him the photo. Wow. So he looks at me, he goes, Brandon, this is really nice. Thank you. Are you going to see Muhammad? I said, of course, yeah. Would you mind giving him this note? I said, of course. So he writes this note, you know, dear Muhammad, your friend Brandon gave me this beautiful picture of you over Lifton. In the middle of writing the note, he stops. He picks his head up. You are going to give him this note, right? I said, absolutely. Of course, that note never made it to Muhammad, unfortunately. So I have that. It's just like a funny story. And then the other thing is that I did a show on Yes Network called What's It Worth? And then it was The Hookup, where I used to go to people's houses and surprise them that were, you know, where the kid was sick or hospital. We do the kids' rooms. And it was a show about just doing good. And I do it with different players each week. Mm. So at the beginning, when I was doing the What's It Worth show, I would interview a player in their home. They showed me their favorite collectible. It's a cool idea. So I knock on Mariano Rivera's door with three cameras. I go, wake him up. He's a little pissy. And he's like, what do you want? I said, well, I told you I was coming. We got to interview you on your favorite collectibles. I'm sure you have one of your World Series jerseys. This, that. He says, Brian, you sold everything. Seriously? You got nothing? He goes, I got nothing. I go, you better have something. So he goes to the camera guys, come in here. Come take it. We're in his living room. And he takes the box. At that time, there were boxes of videotapes. He empties the box and he takes a knife. Literally, it's all on camera. You can see it on YouTube. And he cuts the box. He goes, this is my glove growing up. Oh. I didn't have a glove. Wow. We go in the back of the stores. We get these cardboard boxes and we cut them up. And this is what we use as a glove. And this is why when I'm fielding, I have really good hands when I field, because look at this glove. And he actually shows me on camera. So I took that cardboard box he cut up that day for me on the interview and he signed it. And I always remember, you know, the humility and the humble of, now, a lot of great things do start off with rough beginnings. That's one of my favorite things.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I totally expected, you know, a base or home plate signed by some, you know, something that would be very unique.
I've got some of that stuff. I'm not that kind of collector where I've collected. Well, the stuff that I really are meaningful to me is stuff that I've either created that took off. Which if I took you to my sports room, like, you know, there's a whole bunch of things that I kind of invented, you know, from the dirt to the, there's just so many ways of manipulating photos or just, you know, the game used base I created, you know, because I went to the, I remember going to the team side, I think we used to sell the game used base, take them right off the field and have a FedEx guy, as one of the ground crew guys, run right into the stands to deliver it. It's great. It's a duel. And they're like, there's no way we're doing that. That's not happening. Like 3 years later, it was happening. And it was like one of my great promos I did at Yankee Stadium. I said, only because they were like, that's no way that's happening. And then, boom, we're like delivering game use bases. People are flipping out. Wow. But I've got like little things like that. I'm more about the relationships that I have with players that, you know, like a letter from Hank Aaron that helped them raise like $500,000 for chasing a dream. I have that, you know, stuff like that.
Wow.
But, you know, I got issues. I have a lot of collections. It would take another hour of the show to talk about my collection, which I'm sure I don't think anybody's interested.
Well, Brandon, I would like to just shift gears just for a moment and talk a little bit about the books that you've written. Can you tell us a little synopsis of each one of the books that you've written?
Yeah, I mean, real simply, I mean, I wrote three books. Again, they're free on Collectible Exchange. You just go on the site and click on it. But the business playbook I wrote, when I got out of college, I couldn't find a job. And it really pissed me off because I've been working since I'm 10 years old. And the arrogance, this is my arrogance, I said, one day when I figure this out, I'm going to write a book about how to prepare better in high school and college. So when you get started, you have. And that's what that book is. It's really, really small nuggets that if you're in college or you're just beginning in your 20s of starting a business or really want to elevate, that Because sometimes you read these motivational sales books, they're good, but how do you put it? It's hard to put it in play. Everything in that book you can do. The biggest feedback on that book is like, Brandon, I could do everything in this book. I don't know how you became so successful, because anybody could do this. I'm like, yeah, exactly. But you got to do it. You got to have balls. Came from, like, you know, we're at a wedding and my wife's like, I can't take it. If another person comes over, you say, how'd you start starting? How did this work? How did this all come together? And I'm very grateful. But my wife's like, I've had it. Because one night this wedding was like three deep. And people are like, how'd you do this? Like, what'd you do? And so I decided, I wrote a book from beginning to end about how the whole thing got graded starting at 10 years old. And it's got some great stories from athletes and good learning lessons. As I'm reading the reviews on Amazon about the You Gotta Have Balls book, the guy says, how convenient it is for you, Steiner. It couldn't have been all rosy. And I was definitely a little negligent at putting some of the downsides. So The Living on Purpose is a book that, I guess the question is, like, everybody's trying to be successful and you have your own definition of it, but nobody forecasts and plans for what you're going to do after you become successful. And as this book picks up when I'm 50, and it says, Jesus, you know, I've done really well, I've created this business, and geez, I don't have a really good game plan of what I was going to do after I became successful. I made some money and my kids were starting to grow up. There was like, I didn't have a really good strategy. So it really picks up from there, and it's very transparent. My family was not happy with me about the highs and lows, about how I got there, but also about what I had to do at 50 so that I can have another vibrant 20, 30, 40 years. Wow. It's a great Father's Day gift. It's a great Mother's Day gift. It's a book that I think it's my best work, actually, because it doesn't tell you what to do. I showed you what I did and where I got the advice from. So I went all over the country to get the best advice from having better sex, getting healthier, how to sleep better, how to eat better, how to exercise better, how to everything. Because, I mean, listen, you can have a ton of money, but if your kids hate you, or you're not healthy, or, you know, you don't have faith in God, and you have no spirituality, like, I don't know, that's kind of broke. So how rich are you? And I think the book really shows you about how to respect those categories and how you can still play into them and learn. It's never too late.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to adding all three of them to my list. I didn't know about the last one that you spoke about.
Just launched it last year, and then just been so much going on. I really haven't promoted it all that much, but the feedback I get from that book is make you cry, because it really will have an impact on you. You Gotta Have Balls is great, just because if you're trying to build something, you guys are building this pod, and it really does give you the inspiration, realizing, like, that guy is not that smart. I mean, I cannot believe how many kids have walked up and said, you know, I can't believe what you built here. You're not that smart. Like, this book, I could do everything exactly. I didn't say I was that smart.
Yeah.
And I really try to break it down so that you can implement the things I talk about in these books very easily. Because I think sometimes these books sometimes speak over you. They're interesting, but you can't put it in play. It's like, it's too hard.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff I talk about, and if you read my blogs, that you can put that in play. Like, you're just talking about that blog being present.
Yeah.
You could put that blog in play.
Yeah.
It's 90 seconds. My blogs are never longer than 90 seconds on BrandonSteiner.com. Because I know most people, most guys, especially have ADHD, they're not going to sit there and read a long thing. 90 seconds, boom.
Now, to the fans out there, if you get a chance, go to BrandonSteiner.com. I read the small, you know, blog that he wrote, Be Present, and it was really good. And it's very short, concise, and direct, and to the point.
Right. I'll tell you another blog that's a hit, that's a heartbreaker, that I probably got hundreds of responses on, is I Wish I Brought My Mother a Red Convertible. I wrote that on Mother's Day. Read that blog. I actually cried while I wrote that. That was like one of the most heart-wrenching blogs, but it had a profound effect on a lot of people. Still to this day, people will email me and say, Brandon, thank you for that blog. Like, I just did this for my mom. I just did that for my mom. There's nobody more important on the planet than your mom. Mothers are the most important people on the planet, period. There's not even a distant, close second.
Well, that's great. Well, Brandon, I guess, first off, I want to thank you for joining us here today. Tell us how our listeners can get a free book again. You know, go through that and tell us where we can find it.
Go to Collectible Exchange or cxstuff.com. You got to, you know, pick any one of the three books for free. I'm a big LinkedIn guy. You got to follow me, but message me on LinkedIn or follow me on LinkedIn. And if you want to get the 22 Laws of Negotiating, go to BrandonSteiner.com. That's where you go register for the blog. That's cool. And I'm around. I do answer all my social. I'm not a typical 60-year-old. I love social. I love hearing from people. And if you got a question or problem, you know, hit me with it, man. And I hope you're collecting. I hope you're having a fun time collecting. It's a good time without sports. At least you got the memories, you know. You watch some old games. You got some fun stuff that you're collecting. It's a good thing to do with your kids and stuff. So hopefully you're enjoying that. And if you got some stuff to sell, I'm your guy. Something unusual, I'm here.
That sounds great.
Thank you, Brandon. We appreciate it.
Anytime, man. And next time we do something, let's do something where fans can call in. We do a What's It Worth segment.
That'd be great.
And I can tell them what they have and what it's worth. It's amazing, the collectors out there. It's crazy. Yeah. And we can go over it and we can tell them what they have, what it's worth, and what they can do with it.
You got it. Thank you, Brandon.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Thanks again for tuning in to Surge Baseball and Beyond. If you have any questions, feel free to tweet us at WinSurgeICT or the Cookie Rojas or myself at Mr. Tim Grubbs. We appreciate you liking our podcast and telling others. Be safe and healthy. Thanks again for tuning in. Our special thanks to Brandon Steiner, who joined us on this week's episode, and of course, my co-host, Cookie Rojas. This is Tim Grubbs saying farewell and look forward to seeing you soon.